Live from the VBS Radio Studio in Los Angeles, California, this is Head to Head, the sports talk show that goes inside today's stories to get the big picture. Now, here's your host for Head to Head, Bob McGregor.
Hi, everyone. It was the weekend football fans have been waiting all summer long for as week one of the National Football League's 2013-2014 season officially got underway. Lots to talk about and a few notable surprises along the way, too. Then a bit later, what's in a name? Shakespeare had his take on it, but some Americans aren't taking too kindly to one NFL club's team name. We'll tell you why. And later, are you one of the millions who participate in a fantasy football league? It's arguably the next best thing to owning your own team, right? But what happens when pro athletes start playing fantasy football? Depending on the stakes, could temptation lead to point shaving? It's all ahead this afternoon on Head to Head.
I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update is brought to you by Prue Sports Management. Young quarterbacks took center stage in week one of the NFL season on Sunday. Colin Kaepernick threw for 412 yards and three touchdowns as the 49ers beat Green Bay 34-28. Fellow youngster Andrew Luck led his eighth fourth-quarter comeback as the Colts defeated Oakland 21-17. And in New York, a late hit on rookie Geno Smith put the Jets in position to defeat the Buccaneers 18-17 on Nick Folk's 37-yard field goal. I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update has been brought to you by Prue Sports Management, representing athletes in the United States, in Canada, and around the world.
Stay tuned. Head to Head will be right back on the VBS Radio Network. This is Head to Head with your host, Bob McGregor.
Well, football is definitely upon us. It's week one in the NFL. There were 13 games on Sunday. And to talk about that and what's happening with the NFL this season, I have Darren Gant from NBC's ProFootballTalk.com. He's also a former Panthers beat writer and also award-winning journalist and coach Jim Mojo Morrison from the JetsInsider.com. Jim's been covering both covering sports and coaching it in many different aspects over the last 30 years or so. And he also co-hosts Jets Insider Radio each week with Jets Insider founder and publisher Sean Deegan. Welcome to both Jim and Darren. How are you guys today?
Doing well, thanks.
Doing great today.
Good. Excellent. Well, 13 games on the schedule yesterday. I didn't get a chance to see them all, but I'm sure that you guys at least saw highlights. What were your thoughts going into week number one? Start with you, Darren.
Well, I think as much as anything, probably the biggest eye-opener was the first game of the week, which was last Thursday, and just seeing the way the Broncos were able to, A, move it up and down the field. I mean, this just in, Peyton Manning pretty good at football, but they were able to do enough on defense, and that's going to be a big question with them all year. I mean, until they get Von Miller back on the field and figuring out how to replace an Elvis Dumervil, I mean, it's going to be a challenge, and they were able to do enough defensively, and I think that's a credit to John Fox and his staff. I mean, he knows he's not going to be able to draw it up the same way he was before because of those personnel shortages, but that was a pretty dominant performance by those guys on the offensive side of the ball, and I think they did enough defensively, and that's going to be their pattern. So, I mean, to me, you know, again, that was a big eye-opener. Anytime you hang 49 on somebody coming out of the chute, you know, that's going to get everybody's attention, and I think that was, you know, along with the San Francisco game yesterday, really kind of a statement of intent on both sides of the ledger.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. And it wasn't just anybody that the Broncos beat either.
Right. This was not going 28-2 against the Jags the way the Chiefs did yesterday. I mean, this is a quality opponent, you know, defending Super Bowl champ that's still got a lot of talent over there, especially, and to be honest with you, I mean, again, it's Peyton Manning we're talking about, but I think the Ravens actually, if you look over the long term, have an opportunity to be better on defense than they were a year ago. And everybody falls in love with the big names, the Ray Lewis, the Ed Reeds, but they added a lot of parts in there this year, younger guys, faster guys, and I think they've got an opportunity to do some more things once they get kind of settled in a little bit. But you know, they looked a little shell-shocked the other night, but Peyton Manning does that to people.
Yeah, I hear you. Jim, anybody that disappointed you this weekend?
Well, one of the observations I made watching the games yesterday is that the NFL definitely misses the old style of training camp. I mean, there were so many teams that just lacked precision and familiarity with each other, and you just looked around at all the different games. I mean, Pittsburgh, and you looked the way the Giants started. Seattle struggled with their offense. It just seems that there's just not enough time spent in the preseason getting ready for the opening game of the season because they're so afraid of injuries, and you see it in week one with the way teams execute overall. I think it will improve going into week two, but I think that there's a lot of lack of precision on a lot of the teams that we're expecting big things from going forward in the season.
Well, I was going to say that as dominant as the Broncos were, it really took them until about the midway point of the second quarter to really start to get into a rhythm.
You saw that with a lot of teams throughout the course of week one. I mean, Brady struggled with his offense in New England. Seahawks struggled down in Carolina. Eli Manning struggled in the first half with his offense. There was just a lot of teams that you're expecting big things from, and you just didn't get it in week one. I mean, the Steelers are, you know, the case in point. I mean, they didn't even score a touchdown until the fourth quarter. You're at home against the Titans. That just was mind-boggling.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the young quarterbacks that are in the league and how they fared and what your thoughts are on week number two. Stand by. We'll be back with more on Head to Head.
Got a question for our guests? Call Head to Head now, toll free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-888. 627-6008. This is Head to Head. Now back to your host, Bob McGregor.
We're back on Head to Head. How you doing? It's Bob McGregor, and we're talking with Darren Gant from NBC's Pro Football Talk, as well as Jim Mojo Morrison from JetsInsider.com. Opening weekend of the NFL regular season, there were 13 games on tap Sunday. Of course, the starter to it all was on Thursday, Ravens and Broncos. And tonight, there are two games, Eagles versus the Redskins and the Texans versus the Chargers. Was it just me, or was I the only guy who felt sorry for Eli Manning yesterday?
Well, I think a lot of people did.
Sorry for him. But I think,
Eli was
a Super Bowl MVP, and you've got to look at where he was. He kind of starts years off slowly. I think the running back situation that the Giants have right now needs to be rectified going forward. It's funny because you see the six turnovers and you look at the way the Giants played in that first half, and yet they were a possession away from taking the lead in the fourth quarter. So it just goes to show you how good Eli Manning is. But I think that his running back situation needs to be fixed in a hurry if they're going to continue to have success.
And Jim, you mentioned earlier, you talked about not having the old-style preseason, the old-style training camp. Here's Eli Manning, who was without basically his top two receivers, you know, for the biggest part of the off season, and I think that does, you know, take some time. And when you look at it, the fact that at the end of the day, those two topped 100 yards, so did Reuben Randall, I think that speaks to how good a player he actually is, that, you know, they can still put up big numbers, they can still do a lot of things, even in a situation that's far from perfect. They've got a lot of things to iron out, and I think David Wilson's going to have to be addressed. I mean, not just with the fumbling, but with the pass protection too. And that's something that they're going to have to get ironed out, and something I expect you'll see them bring in a veteran back sometime soon just to kind of, and again, the fumbles are going to get the headlines, but that pass protection plays into those bigger issues. And until they get some of those things squared away, I think it's going to be tough for them for a minute.
Oh, you got to expect
turnovers.
Darren,
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that situation in the first quarter when they had the ball at the half-yard line, all they need to do is punch it in. They go up 7-3. They lose a half yard on first down, and then Wilson blows his pass-blocking coverage. They sack Eli. They have to settle for 3 points, and it's a totally different game. So you're right. David Wilson needs to really up his game if he wants to be the featured back for the New York Giants.
Number of ball clubs are putting a stock in young quarterbacks. Who do you like, and who should we keep an eye on? Darren.
We know that Luck kid in Indianapolis. He's pretty good. it turns out. I mean, I think one of the things that's most impressive about him is when there are a lot of moving parts, and the Colts are still trying to figure out a little bit of an identity for themselves, still moving guys in and out of that offense. But that guy, that was 8 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter, and he's going into his 18th game next week. So, you know, this kid was as good as advertised coming out of college. He's got a calm about him. The situation's obviously not too big for him at any point in time. And I think having him there, I mean, obviously they made the right call for the long term, going from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck. Now, that takes guts. That's a big, you know, pill to swallow if you're the Colts management. But I think they did the right thing for the long term, and I think it puts them in better position for years to come. Listen, as long as Andrew Luck's healthy, there's a floor for how bad the Indianapolis Colts are going to be.
A lot of upside. Jim, what did you think of Kaepernick?
Well, I agree with him 100%. Andrew Luck is the cream of the crop as far as the young quarterbacks are concerned. I had cover one in New York with Geno Smith making his first start. There's a lot of love for Geno Smith in New York amongst Jet fans. I take a lot of heat because I was a supporter of keeping Mark Sanchez in to start the season until the unspeakable of putting him in that preseason game against the Giants and watching him get destroyed behind a third-string line. It looks like he might have a labrum issue now. They're going for another opinion before he goes to see Dr. James Andrews, still the day-to-day. I thought Geno Smith was okay yesterday. He managed the game, didn't do anything out of the ordinary. He had his one interception, his one fumble. They're saying it was physical mistakes and it's part of the growing process. He showed composure down the stretch, which was a positive for a rookie quarterback. And I thought he showed some good things with his legs. He got out of pressure with the Jets offensive line right now. With Vlad DeCoste playing left guard, you're going to need a quarterback that can get out of the pocket under pressure. So I thought that was a positive. Overall, the Jets were given a win by a very poor Bucs team yesterday, and they'll take it. You know, one win in you know, week one, I mean, you can't ask for that anything better.
Speaking of struggling, the AFC North went 0-4 this week. Is that an indication of things to come?
Well, I think it's a little bit out of the norm as it stands to a couple of them. I think the Bengals are going to be really good. They've got the kind of defense that's going to keep them competitive or more with just about anybody in the league. Now, I know there were times yesterday that wasn't necessarily apparent, but if you look at their personnel, those guys are built for the long haul. And Andy Dalton's not a guy who's going to go out and wow people, but he's enough of a quarterback to win with what they've got around him. And I think that's credit to Marvin Lewis for realizing that. I think a lot of times coaches get themselves in trouble by not having an awareness of what they've got around him. I mean, if your quarterback's Andy Dalton, you're not going to play the same kind of game other teams are playing. But if Andy Dalton's smart with the ball, you know, hey, put it in A.J. Green's hands a couple times a game. Limit what he has to do and let that defense win games for you. I think those guys are going to be all right over the long term. I think there are some issues, you know, otherwise in that division. I think there's reason to be concerned about the Steelers with the injuries yesterday and just some of the issues that existed prior to that. I think they're still, you know, very much trying to figure out what they want to be under Todd Haley.
Yeah. Mark Trestman, in his debut as a head coach for the Chicago Bears, wins over the Bengals by 3 points, 24-21. He had a very successful career in the CFL with the Montreal Alouettes. Any feelings on how you think he's going to do this year? Jim?
Well, I think that he's going to do okay. It's just, you know, as Darren was talking about with identity with the Steelers, Bears are kind of making that transition now from a defensive-minded team to an offensive-minded team. That's why they brought Trestman in. They want to build the team around Jay Cutler and make him the focal point, as opposed to when Lovie was there, it was a defense-first team. The Bears still played well defensively yesterday. They made some plays, as they have over the years. But I think that once the Bears make that complete transition to an offensive team, I think they'll be a pretty decent team. I think Trestman is a good coach, and he's got some talent there on the offensive side with the Bears to make things happen.
Only got a couple of seconds just to wrap up. Darren, Eagles and Redskins tonight, who do you like?
you know, I think the Redskins have a big advantage, but the one thing about the Eagles, they're hard to game plan right now because nobody really knows what to expect. There's some hints based on what we've seen in the preseason, what we know about Chip Kelly from Oregon, but I think that's still a very, very much unknown commodity. I think they're going to be okay offensively because of the way Michael Vick's kind of embraced that job and made it his own. I think it was a challenge for him to kind of sell Chip Kelly on himself, but I think they're going to be okay offensively. How able they're going to be to stop anybody on the other side, I think, is very much in question. And you know what? I think it's going to be difficult for them to keep pace. They're going to look at that game last night and watch both teams in the 30s, and just based on what the Eagles are rolling out there as a starting defense, I'm not sure they want to. You know, I'm not sure they're going to be able to keep from getting in games like that.
Yeah, Jim. Texans and Chargers.
The Texans and Chargers, I think that the team that nobody's talking about this year in the AFC is the Texans. I think that this could be the year, based on the fact that the competition in the AFC is wide open. Other than Denver, there really isn't a powerful team. You don't know yet what the Patriots are going to be. The Texans, it's there for them this year to make the next step. Whether they do that is another question because they've been very inconsistent over the years. But I think it's there for the Texans taking to be one of the elite teams in the AFC, them and the Broncos, at least right now to start the year, in my opinion, are the top two teams in that conference.
Good stuff. Derek Gant from NBC's ProFootballTalk.com and Jim Mojo Morrison from JetsInsider.com. Thank you guys for being here.
Absolutely.
My pleasure.
I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update is brought to you by Prue Sports Management. More NFL results from Sunday had the Saints over Atlanta as Drew Brees threw for 357 yards and two scores. In Buffalo, the Patriots survived rookie E.J. Manuel and the Bills 23-21. Alex Smith passed for two touchdowns in the Chiefs' 28-2 win over Jacksonville, and the Bears came back to defeat the Bengals 24-21 in Chicago. Maybe the most surprising result was in Pittsburgh, where Tennessee handled the Steelers easily 16-9. I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update has been brought to you by Pru Sports Management, representing athletes in the United States and Canada and around the world.
Head to Head delves deeper into today's sports stories on the BBS Radio Network. This is Head to Head. Here's Bob McGregor.
We're back, and we're still talking football, but we're going to take it a little bit off to one side right now and talk about one specific game that's happening tonight between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Redskins. And to talk more on that, we'll bring in our producers, Elizabeth Judge and Stephen Bowers. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
So, I'm good. Native Americans are making a point today on their website, changethemascot.org. And which one of you guys wants to talk a little bit more about this?
I can go with that, Bob.
Sure.
Specifically, it is the Oneida Indian Nation. They announced a new advertising campaign to... Their hope is to get the Washington Redskins to change their name right. to anything, it seems, other than Redskins. They find it to be a racial slur.
Yep.
And they basically kind of liken it to if there was, you know, if they were called the Whiteskins, something like that.
Right, right. Well, and really, I would have to say that the term Redskins is clearly derogatory. I don't see that it was ever intended to be simply a description. But at the time that they chose that name, we didn't have this awareness in the English vernacular, that some things are just politically incorrect. Stephen, is this something that we're going to see more of? As I mean, we've seen it before with the chop, So it's not something that we should be all too surprised about, but why does it take sports organizations so long to react to this stuff?
Well, I don't know, Bob. I think actually when this term originally came about, it was seen as a derogatory term, but people, to be honest, then really just didn't care. I think now the sensitivity way past time has finally come around to the point where we realize and are willing to actually take a stand against things that are this insensitive. I think it's pretty obvious, like Elizabeth said, to most anybody. If this was a term that was coined now, a nickname that was coined now, I think everybody would immediately been up in arms and say, man, that's inappropriate. You can't do that. You can't call a team, like she said, maybe the Brownskins or something. I mean, that would just, we would immediately shoot it down. Yeah. But it becomes something that we've grown so accustomed to over the years that we just want to push it aside and go with it. But I think, like you said, you brought up the Braves. In certain instances like Florida State Seminoles where it's clearly paying tribute to a certain, Indian tribe or whatever, and they've approved, they put their seal of approval on it. I think that's completely different, but that's the name of a tribe. That's not, a simple reference to the color of somebody's skin, which to me is just obviously, not okay.
Yeah, and I know there are going to be some fans out there who are saying that, you know, it's too politically correct and we've gone so far and why do we have to take all the fun out of it, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, if this were another race of people and the terminology was the N-word instead of the Redskins, you know, I don't think we'd be having a debate. It would be done already.
That's exactly right. Go ahead, Liz.
Well, and I think people, that's the problem. Not everyone, is as educated. Not everyone sees it as derogatory. So some teams are changing. Some teams aren't. There isn't any consistency to it. So until that maybe happens, we are going to have problems where some teams just refuse to. There were a few members of Congress that actually sent a letter to, Dan Snyder as well as Roger Goodell asking them to consider a name change. So it's not just the Indian Nation themselves that are asking for it. I mean, other people are realizing it. They say on their own website that high school students, their high school was called the Redskins, and they themselves chose to change the name to something else.
Right. Well, I mean, it may be something that, you know, mainstream USA has to get behind as well, whether they're contacting changethemascot.org and throwing their support behind it, or whether there's some kind of a petition being launched. But I think, you know, the silent majority has to step up on this one and just say something. Otherwise, this thing could drag on for years again and without result.
Yeah, I agree. And I admit I was originally one of those that just thought, why not just leave well enough alone? Because it was something that we had heard and grown used to for so long. You really don't think about it, but I agree now. And I think what it takes is somebody, I mean, the owner has pretty much defiantly or almost dismissively said, I'm not changing it. And that's the way it is. Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, come out and basically tried to make it sound as though it was a positive thing, as though it was praising a group of people. So I agree with you. I think it takes a groups of people coming out and speaking out against it. And I do think it eventually will. At first I thought no way, but I do think we're kind of headed towards more a time when this name will be changed.
Yeah. Well, again, the website is changethemascot.org. And if you go there, there's actually an NFL GameSpot audio bite that's a minute long that is going to affect tonight's game in one way or another. I'm sure you'll be hearing about it in the news tomorrow. Give a listen to it, and if you have a chance, throw your support behind it, or at least give them your feedback. I'm sure they would like to have that. Thank you to Elizabeth Judge and Stephen Bowers, our producers. We will be back with more of Head to Head in just a minute.
We're taking a short time out. Consider this your 2-minute warning. Got a question for our guests? Call Head to Head now, toll free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-627-6008.
Brandon, are you there?
Yes, I am. How's everybody doing?
Good, good. Elizabeth and Steven still with us, and I'm going to change gears a little bit, but still talking football, this time fantasy football. You guys involved in a fantasy football league?
Oh, unfortunately, I'm not able to do it this year. My little one is all my fantasy come true, so.
Oh, that's nice. Steven?
I decided to take a year off. I didn't want to dominate again.
Yeah. Oh.
Let somebody else have a chance. I'm only in 4 leagues, Bob, so.
That's it, eh? Wow.
Yeah, I've dialed it down a little bit.
And Elizabeth, are you trying to keep your nose clear of it, or are you involved too?
I am for my first year.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yes. So we're trying it out for the first time. I haven't done football before. I've done other sports, so
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know baseball and hockey are also big into fantasy as well, but the big question that has been raised in a couple of different places is what happens when the pros, the athletes themselves, get involved in these fantasy games? Is there a risk here that somebody could start sandbagging or playing to make the points work in their favor? Is that possible?
Bob, during one of our conversations about this, Stephen and I both referenced hearing the same story about how one of the tailbacks in the league, one of the prominent tailbacks in the league, had to look at his fullback one time because the two of them were facing off against each other and had to convince, they jokingly, I guess, had to convince him to block on the play because he didn't want his tailback to beat him in their matchup. So just the fact that that could even be considered a joke in the huddle makes me nervous that it might actually play out during a regular game.
And there are no rules or anything that I'm aware of in any of the pro sports that prohibit players from being involved in this kind of stuff.
Not at all. In fact, actually, one of our listeners is commenting, simply stating that the NFL endorses fantasy sports, and they even have fantasy rooms and scoreboards that are mandated in some of the stadiums. So it does seem that at least the NFL endorses the idea of their players playing and using that at least to help rally around more viewers and listeners to their game.
Well, there's no question that, you know, from a marketing standpoint, it certainly helps to raise the excitement level and the awareness level of the players and the teams and their standings and all of that good stuff. But by the same token, I mean, there is a temptation involved, and especially, I mean, we're talking about multimillionaire players who probably are not playing for a few dollars here and there like you and I might be. There might be good incentive for them to have a game go a little bit differently just so that things work out for them.
That's exactly right. And I'm actually a little surprised that the NFL does allow it. I've kind of been waiting for the day when they try to. The NFL usually likes to have their hand on everything and kind of control everything involving their game anyway. And I do think it's a legitimate concern. Like you said, anytime there's money involved, and I'm sure these guys aren't playing for chump change. You never know just what a guy might do if he's got enough money riding on his game, and then that affects the character of the game. You know, the integrity of the game. And that, to me, that worries me a little bit.
Yeah. Is there a quick fix? Like, could you just simply say pro athletes can't bet on, 'cause it is a bet, really, in a way. Pro athletes can't bet through fantasy leagues. I don't know. Is that doable? It's not a straight up bet. It's not like I'm betting that this team's going to win tomorrow night against that team, right?
Well, you know, Pete Rose was kicked out of baseball, and he's been pretty much ridiculed and for how many years now for supposedly, according to him, betting on his own team and, you know, tampering with the outcomes of games. And that's in baseball. They have strict rules against it. And, in reality, that's what you're doing. You're gambling on the game in one way or another if you're involved with this stuff. So, I don't know exactly how you regulate it, but, I would think that that's coming sooner or later.
You guys made any serious change off of any of your fantasy leagues that you've been involved in?
Not a serious change, but thankfully with some of my winnings, I was able to get my Xbox 360 so I can get my football fixed throughout the week too.
Nice.
There you go. So it's been some pin money, basically. It's just enough money to treat yourself to something.
Pretty much, yeah. Treat yourself to something. You know, take the lady out on a nice date, or even in addition to that, maybe take yourself out to some event that you would like to attend that now you can afford since you decided to dominate your league.
Right. And Liz, you were saying that you were involved in other fantasy leagues in the past. What sports were those in?
Hockey.
Yeah.
Primarily. As far as winnings go, I have the problem of choosing players I like as opposed to players I think will do well.
Right.
But I think that's possibly, you know, a problem at the pro level too.
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to choose players on your team and just, I don't know. I think, if you're going to play in a fantasy league, I did read a couple articles where players said, you know, if they were playing against a team, they sat that guy on their fantasy league. They didn't play him that week just because they didn't want that potential controversy to be there. And yeah. I think that's a good way to self-regulate yourself. Otherwise, I mean, who knows where they might end up?
Well, you know, you're right. Stephen, when you were talking about the NFL liking to control everything, especially when it comes to marketing, they're on top of it like nobody else in any of the pro sports. But maybe the answer to this is to let the players, sort of coordinate these different leagues or chat rooms, within the confines of the NFL, but they're not actually playing themselves. They're just sort of goodwill ambassadors on behalf of the league, interacting with the fans, and maybe that's one way to get them involved. But of course, the incentive for them is not quite as nice as facing off in a challenge situation between themselves and their teammates.
Yeah, well, it's all about the shield, they say in the NFL, is protect the brand, protect the shield, and they take it serious. But I do believe that, like you say, it all comes down to dollar signs. And although the NFL likes to be controlling, I mean, they are still controlling this in a way because they're, you know, they make a lot of money off of this too. So, as long as that's the case and it's not decreasing in popularity, it's increasing, you know, that maybe they won't be as quick to regulate it as we think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to undertake a million-dollar study to figure out that fantasy football helps to sell jerseys.
Yeah.
That's just a given. So,
well, a lot of people now, they watch for that reason. And without a doubt, and I've done it for years, we watch maybe teams or games that we wouldn't be interested in otherwise, you know, because of fantasy, but it's also a part of the stadium experience now. There's people, I think, was it Jacksonville where they're talking about putting, where they put the fantasy stats up, because people won't come to the games, but they'll put the fantasy stats up along the little runner inside the stadium, and they do it everywhere.
On the ribbon.
Yeah, the ribbon, yeah, because people a lot of times are more concerned with that, with their personal team that they quote-unquote own than they are the real team on the field. So,
well, from a marketing perspective, that's become the big challenge now for professional sports is how do you do something about the game experience there in the building that draws the fans, because otherwise, I mean, they've done such a good job of setting up these broadcast contracts. People would rather stay home and watch it on TV, so they've got to figure out a way to get them into the building.
No doubt. Yeah, DirecTV, that's a whole different conversation there, because DirecTV and HDTV has completely changed the NFL experience to where people love the NFL as much or more as they ever have, but they would just assume a lot of people would sit in their living room with their 60-inch TV and watch the Red Zone channel.
Yes, and in addition to that, like with us talking about fantasy sports, the fact that you're at home allows you to watch every single game you want instead of being absent at the stadium and trying to figure out or follow on your smartphone what's going on. You can actually be at home with like the Red Zone channel. And in addition to that, the stadium experience can be felt at home with now so many people having theater systems, so they have the surround sound to actually feel like they're there in the first place.
Yeah. And guys, it's not just that. It's also the small screens. I mean, people have notebooks, they have iPads, they have iPhones, they have Samsung. It doesn't matter, right? I mean, regardless of the size of the screen, people are just hooked on this stuff. So any time you can draw eyeballs or ears, there's a marketing opportunity, and certainly the professional sports are trying to do that. And I think that's where somebody needs to help to delineate between what's good for marketing and what keeps the ethics of the game alive. And so players in these fantasy leagues might have to be curtailed to some degree to keep the appearance of things good for the leagues. Hard to say.
Yeah, and the phone thing, you can watch it on your phone. I was watching it yesterday just because I could. And my son was looking at the NFL ticket on my iPhone. You know, yep. And it's just amazing that you can do that now. And he said he didn't want to put it down. He said, "I got to go to the bathroom." I said, "Son, take it with you." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because you can." I mean, it's a long day, a long way away from when I was little and we had two channels and rabbit ears and now you have HDTV on your phone. I mean, it's crazy.
We had three channels, but only two that came in clear, and the other one was always snowy, and you had to keep banging the TV to get it to even show you half the picture.
Yeah. Not to mention, if you could get the rabbit ears in place, you had to stand there and hold them just to try and hold the signal for everybody else.
No kidding.
And you don't even have to turn the channel yourself now, Bob. I mean, Andrew Siciliano on the Red Zone channel, they turn the channel for you to each game. I mean, you don't even have to do that. So it's a long ways from this in-stadium experience.
And they wonder why we're getting fatter. I don't know. I have no idea why that is at all. All I know is I got about 1,100 channels, and there are nights when nothing's on. That's all I know.
Yeah. So very true. Can't believe that many channels, and we still can't find something to watch.
Yeah, no kidding.
You still have to get up to go to the refrigerator, unless you have a kid that can do it for you, but...
I'm trying to get my dogs to do it, but it's not working so far.
Right.
I was going to say, you get your dog to use its tail, open the fridge, you might be all set.
Yeah, that's
right. Just got to set up a mini fridge right next to your couch.
There you go.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, a roundtable discussion on the U.S. Open. Stand by. We'll be back with more.
I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update is brought to you by Pru Sports Management. In the ladies' U.S. Open final, number one seeded Serena Williams defeated number two Victoria Azarenka 7-5, 6-7, 6-1 on Sunday for her fifth U.S. Open and her 17th Grand Slam, one behind Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert. Tonight in the NFL, Robert Griffin III makes his return from last season's knee injury as the Redskins host Philadelphia in the first game of the Monday night doubleheader. In the nightcap, the San Diego Chargers host the Houston Texans to round out week one of the NFL. I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update has been brought to you by Pru Sports Management, representing athletes in the United States, in Canada, and around the world.
question for our guests? Call Head to Head now, toll free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-627-6008. This is Head to Head. Now back to your host, Bob McGregor.
We are back. Anybody watch the tennis yesterday?
Yes, I did.
A little bit.
So you saw Serena?
Saw the whole thing. Serena and Vika put on a good show for everybody. Neither one of them really wanted to lose that one, and that was evidenced by Vika being in tears at the end of that one. Serena actually pulled it out, but they both played really well.
I thought that she had her toughest win, I think, that I've seen in a long time, but by the same token, not really that much of a surprise that the number one seed ends up walking away with another major.
Not surprised the number one seed walked away with another major. What actually for me as a spectator, I was more surprised that as good as Serena has been throughout her career and the times we've seen her with this laser focus and how she dominated the entire tournament, I was surprised to see how rattled she was by the wind that was going through the stadium in last night's match.
A little distracted.
Absolutely. Got to the point at the end of the second set where you would think at that point the conditions would have set in for her, and she was still a bit upset at how her ball was traveling when she would hit it in her returns to Vika.
Yeah. So, Elizabeth, you follow tennis quite a bit, don't you?
Yes, I do. Played in high school, try to follow it.
Oh, you did play?
Yes.
I used to play in high school, too, but I was never really that good at it. I mean, I was all right, but I could still watch really good while I was being aced. Do you think she's as good as some of the greats of the game?
I think it's always hard to compare people from different eras with the game changing so much and just, you know, the technology changing, different kinds of rackets, just everything's changing, but I would consider her definitely well on her way to being one of the greats. I mean, she herself says that she is not as good as Steffi Graf yet because she hasn't won as many majors, but I think in her own way she has changed the game and brought so much different sort of effects to it, just kind of opening it up, breaking down barriers, that in her own way she has become just as good as Steffi Graf.
I mean, there's definitely, you know, that winning attitude that we've seen from the Martina Navratilovas and the Steffi Grafs of the world. I'm not sure if the sport has changed or if there's just so many good tennis players out there now, but I'm on the fence. In some ways, I just think she's a machine like Navratilova and Graf, but in other ways, I think, well, I don't know if we should give her credit yet that she's at the top of the heap, but she's sure. I mean, you can't doubt her ability to win majors. There's no question there.
Looking right at her career. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Liz.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, especially at her age too, I think that's kind of the biggest difference between her and some of the former greats. You know, she's still going. She's still strong. Who knows how many more she has in her. I mean, she doesn't seem to be slowing down at this point, which is different from former athletes, I think, in the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. Brandon, what were you going to add?
Looking at her career, you can't argue with the kind of championships that she's won. She's won all four majors. She's won a gold medal, and she's won doubles titles, mixed doubles titles. The biggest thing that she has contributed to tennis from my perspective is you've never seen as much power in the game, particularly on the women's side, as you do today. And that's ever since she and her sister Venus became a part of the WTA. That being said, when you look at the games of the greats before her, when we're talking about Steffi Graf, when we're talking about Navratilova, they were all different, both because of their eras, but Graf stands out to me because she has four Grand Slam titles, minimum of those for each one, and she won on every single kind of surface that you could imagine.
Yeah.
And that's where she seems to stand apart from both Navratilova and from Serena.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I guess I'm old enough to remember Navratilova in her prime, and she was in a very unique class. There was only three or four athletes that really were as good as she was, and she continued to beat those players on a regular basis, and I think that's what made us think of her as, you know, one of the unbeatables. But well, I mean, we're seeing that right now with Serena Williams. So it's hard to say which athlete, which era has the best, or I guess it really is going to come down to how many majors they win, right?
Always seems like it comes down to the hardware. No matter what sport we're talking about, it always seems to come down to the hardware.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Bob, I would say one thing. What Serena has to me is what Tiger Woods used to possess, in golf, is that, she seems to have her opponents psyched out or intimidated when she takes the court. I think there's a lot of people that are already beaten, when they come out there against her. And I don't know if it's, well, most of it stems from her success, but a lot of it stems from, well, like Brandon said, her power, the style of her game. And, I think that has a lot to do with people just feeling defeated before they even get out there. They're playing against not only her, but their mental ability to overcome who she is and what she's done, previous.
Yeah. I would say that her strength and, her ability to outlast her opponents is what really is the most intimidating part of her game. And it works for her for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys. The big tournament tonight, of course, on the men's side, Nadal versus Djokovic. So we'll probably be talking about that in the days to come. Any ideas or predictions that you guys want to make on that one?
Nadal in four.
Ooh. Steve? Well,
I'm going to give you an update here in just a minute. So,
No, that's cheating.
I'm cheating, but, I'll go with Nadal. That's a hint. I'll go with Nadal.
Oh, okay.
Well, now I'm not going to go against Nadal. You just changed my mind, Steve.
Well, you know, my heartfelt emotional favorite would be Nadal, but, you know, they're both 1 and 2 right now, so I guess either one of them could win, and who knows, even if one of them's in the lead right now, you never know what's going to happen by the end of the game, so.
Yeah, it's still a long way to go, and whoever wins will probably then be number one anyway, so.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, guys, thank you very much. We'll take one more last break, and Stephen, I think you've got a sports update for us as well.
Yes, sir. I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update is brought to you by Pru Sports Management. As promised, the update on the men's U.S. Open final is currently ongoing, and top-seeded Novak Djokovic trails second-seeded Rafael Nadal 6-2. He lost the first set 6-2. He actually leads the second set 4-3. He's down a set. The winner is expected to lay claim to the world's number one ranking. It's the first time since 1996 that both U.S. Open singles finals are 1-2 matchups. I'm Stephen Bowers, and this sports update has been brought to you by Pru Sports Management, representing athletes in the United States and Canada and around the world.
Well, that'll do it for today's show. My thanks to our guests, Darren Gant, NBC's ProFootballTalk.com, and Jim Mojo Morrison from JetsInsider.com, as well as our producers, Elizabeth, Brandon, and Steve. Thank you all for your contributions, and thank you for listening. We are back tomorrow. Have yourself a great night.
You've been listening to Head, heard live every weekday afternoon on The Drive from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. BBSRadio.com is available on your smartphone, laptop, and iPad. Head to Head is produced by Elizabeth Judge in New York, Brandon Chasen in Chicago, and Stephen Bowers in Charlotte. The studio engineer in Los Angeles is Doug Newsom. The host and executive producer is Bob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Pinterest at Head to Head Radio. Miss the show? Head-to-Head archives are available at bbsradio.com. Head-to-Head is copyright 2013 and cannot be transcribed, rebroadcast, reproduced, or reused in any form without the express written consent of the show's executive producer.